All right. Welcome, everybody. Badum Biz, Anthony Frieda here. Got a great guest. So this is like the second one I've done. Super excited about it. 2021, starting out right. Double drums. I got a drummer in front of me on his own kit with his own cymbals. It's going to be great. Drummer Hang. His name is Sean Farrelly.
That's right.
What's up, buddy?
Not too much, Anthony. How are you?
Good, good. So, like, for listeners, we don't know each other that well.
No, but we like know each other through mutual friends, I guess.
Mutual friends. We probably met once. Mm-hmm. And I follow Sean on social media, and he posts these really dope fucking videos of him doing. So here's the thing, man. You do these videos, which are essentially like exercises, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They're fucking entertaining. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's some of the most boring shit sometimes when I see a drummer post an exercise.
Yeah.
But you're doing things that are, first of all, you play it well. So that's like number one in my book. That has to be number one. Number two, it's a huge challenge what you're doing. We're going to get right into the detail.
Well, thank you. The
most recent one I can think of is the tempo's this, right?
Yeah.
And you're doing some crazy pattern in what, like five or something like that?
Yeah, there's a couple. I've been trying to work on five and just internalizing it. And just taking a basic sticking like a paradiddle and throwing a kick after it, you're automatically in five. You know what I mean? Right, you go to paradiddle. Right? But instead of doing it like that, just throw a kick drum, you know, in between. So you go. All right? But then, after that, you want to hear it in like a common time signature that, you know, your bandmates will like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or just be able to hear it in like four. So.
Sure.
Okay, and you want to be able to do that, so...
You're counting so well, man.
Thank you.
During that. That's how I know how much you practice that.
Yeah, so just stuff like that. And then, like, once that kind of gets in your head, you got this, like, this accent pattern going on between the kick and the snare jumps. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, whatever, you know, however you're viewing it.
Yeah.
So then you throw a regular, you know, ostinato or pattern with your right hand over it, so... Right? It works nice.
Yeah,
forward than throwing, you know, the good old good skip beat. Right? And then I've been getting into this other thing, which you've probably seen on some of the videos, taking like a pattern in three that doesn't have to be in triplets. You know, it could be in anything you want.
Anything.
So you can make it, you know, I've been doing it in sixteenths a lot, but then taking that five pattern and putting under, which I think is maybe the video you're talking about. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. You know what I mean? Stuff like
fucking
that.
Fucking God
Then
damn
you
it.
Switch it. Right? But counting it is the most important thing. And it's not like I'm going to always do this stuff on the gig.
Yeah.
But I want the options to... I want to be able to hear other options so I'm more confident doing... Whatever, you know, whatever groove I'm playing, I want to be more confident with that.
I'd rather hear a fill in something like that.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't, you don't leave home base of the groove.
Right.
You're just taking a little accent between, or a cool little phrase between the kick and the snare.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I like that way better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's so much more hip. And it's like
still in the pocket, right?
Like a little bit of sauce. Just like
a little bit of sauce, right?
Yeah. It's not like this huge, grandiose thing. But yeah, I've always been into that sort of practice. Like a lot of the bands I play with now, they don't really require a lot of that.
Yeah.
But still, I that's where I come from. I come from like a huge place.
I gotta mention this too, because this is what, like, oh man. So, listeners, again, he's playing at like these tempos. He's going through these different patterns. But the problem is that it tripped me up real fast because I'm feeling that, right? But the click is on the E's and the U's.
So yeah, that's the thing I do a lot. I don't know if you're familiar with the 80-20 drummer on YouTube.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Nate something,
Nate
right?
Nate Smith, yeah. He's the other Nate Smith, but he's equally as great. Shout out to Nate. So I did the 80-20 coaching course like probably 4 or 5 years ago because I was like, I want to get better. And he was all about this micro time practice.
Okay.
Which is the E's and the U's, just having all the 16th notes being clicked out or triplets, whatever.
Sure.
And I went through the course, and he asked me to help co-coach the course for a little bit. So, like, if he couldn't get to some submissions for, like, less advanced you know, players, I would just do my GoPro thing and do like that. So yeah, and I did that for a while, but I really adapted that 16th note practice.
Dude.
And yeah, it's so good. Even, dude, even just doing this. And just, yeah, exactly. You got it. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
But then, or then now I've been getting into like just playing like the E and like having it sound completely.
Yep.
It's so funny because the other guys I work with, they're like, yeah, Sean's been playing drums for like 16 years, still doesn't know how to play with the metronome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Dude. That is so fucking funny, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, because they're the assholes.
Yeah, yeah. But it's funny. It's all in jest.
But obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, let me demonstrate this.
Yeah.
This is how cool. Because what we're talking about, even conceptually, somebody listening who doesn't, you know, who's never seen it, they're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Exactly.
So I'll just, let me just like, I'm going to start clicking.
Okay.
And you're going to come in.
Okay.
Like, or E, whatever you feel like.
Okay.
But let's just say, listeners, here's the metronome.
One E and a two E and a two E and a four E and a one E and a three E and a three E and a... Okay, hold on. So. So that's with it on the ends. Two E and a, three E and a, four E and a, one, three E and a, four E and a. Okay. So now I can make that, if you want, I can make that click the E, the Okay, so.
Yeah, man. Again, everybody's probably feeling one, two, right? But here Sean goes.
Okay, so if I'm going to view this as the
Sure.
One E and a, two, three. One E. Oh, one E. Oh, keep going.
I'm
one E and a two E and
my bad.
It's all right. A one E and a two E and a three E and a four E and a two E and a three E and a four E and a one E and a two E and a three E and a four E and a one E and a two E and a three E and and a one E and a two E and a three E and a four E and a one E and a two E and a three E and a four E and a one E and a two E three E and a four E and a one E and a two E and a three E and a four E and a one E and a two E and a three E a four E and a one E. Okay, so if we keep that going, you can even do the E. E and a one E and a two E and a three E and a four E and a one, two. Yeah, yeah. One. All right. E and a one, E and a two, E and a three, E and a four, E and a one, E and a two, E and a three, E and a four, E and a one, E and a two, E and a three, E and a four, E and a one, two, E and a three, E and a four, E and a one, E and a two. Okay.
That's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like the point of this.
Yeah. So yeah,
it's flipping your mind.
Yep.
It has nothing to do with your hands.
Exactly.
At all. It's
exactly.
All in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're flexing, learning to flex a muscle in your mind.
Exactly.
It's hard. And you're changing your grid.
Yep.
And you can go, right? And the other thing that's hard about is, when did you start? How old are you?
I am 31.
Okay. So we're about the same age.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And how long have you been practicing just like.
Oh, so long.
on the downbeat or, right?
Yep.
Eighth notes.
Yep.
So like, and even maybe with the 16th,
right? Right,
right. This is, you're working against what you know.
Exactly. You're feeling the time in a different
rebuilding.
Way. Exactly. Do you know who Nate Wood is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Man.
So Nate Wood, he's really into this sort of off place, you know, especially on the E. Like I read a story like he was talking to Larnell Lewis, and that's how like he got like his time so good.
Oh, you know, really?
Just
okay.
playing on the E like that. I'm actually, it's funny because I'm more comfortable with the E and offbeat because I'm just
unreal.
Used to do
I've
that.
Watched you when I watched you do it. Your yeah. tempo was like this beat, and your click was
exactly.
And you're playing an exercise, and then you're also like, were you kind of like improvising a little bit?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're doing it like
Yeah, it's you know,
like you are fluent in the language.
Yep, I'm trying. You know, trying my best. It's always a
like you made it look easy.
Yeah. Well, thank you, dude. Yeah, it's always a process, though. You know, there's always times where like, oh, it's weird. You know, or moving the click to just a different spot. Like I've been leaving a lot of holes lately, just having it like, you know, on beat one and stuff like that. You know,
yeah,
which is like a whole different. It's like the other direction, but equally as important, especially if you don't play with a metronome like live a lot. It's good to for your relative time.
Absolutely.
You know, but yeah, those E's and A's, like just playing this. E and up, and hitting those accents, and you know, it's really important, and it kind of sheds light on simple exercises, like you know, grooves that you the money grooves, you know what I mean? Playing this and just hearing it in a different way kind of breathes a new life into it.
Absolutely,
I feel like. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Like, and then your groove is still there. That's still the thing. If that's not there, I'm not interested.
Exactly.
But you still had a feel. Mm-hmm. The most important thing. And would you say, again, I have to ask you, I haven't done a ton of that shit. I've done a little bit at much slower tempos, much easier patterns. But when you're playing in a group and you're playing something that's grooving and you're trying to really get people like to, you want to see physical movement based on what you're playing.
Yes.
Do you notice that these exercises in any way have made that better and in any specific way that you can think of or not? But
better in terms of, yeah, I feel like if you feel the time better and like you're counting it with attitude, one and two, and I feel like that translates in the groove because, you know, a thousand different drummers can play or, you know.
Sure.
You know, a thousand different drummers can play that sort of thing.
Sure.
But it's all about those idiosyncrasies that really, you know, bring it to the next level. And if it feels good to, like, you on the inside, it's probably going to feel better to somebody else.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that goes with a lot of things besides just time, like how you're attacking the drums. Like,
yeah.
You know, are you digging your sticks into the heads? Like, you don't want to do that a lot. You want them to bounce off. There's all of these different components that go into what makes you sound like the way you are. You know what I mean? So it's, yeah, I feel like doing these exercises, and you don't even need a drum set to do these. Like,
you can
just practice clapping and counting. And yeah, I mean, I think it gives me a better ability to get the audience to kind of move. You know what I mean? To dance, to feel the music.
That's
you know
so important.
I mean? Yeah. And make everybody else in the band happy. So
yes.
I play in a lot of, well, in the before times, you know, I played in a lot of different groups.
BT.
Like, yeah. Like, you know, two, three times a week around here, which is, you know, which is pretty good for this area, you know, I think. But,
was it original stuff? Was it covers?
All sorts. There was
all
some
sorts.
Originals, mixtures, some just covers, but I would always get calls from just different bands that I played with, you know, just to play. I think, you know, one of those factors is that, like, I'm pretty, you know, I'm consistent when I play. I don't just, like, chop out the whole time and make it all about me. And I make everybody else feel good.
Yeah.
I think that's why people call, maybe I'm cool to hang out with, too. I don't know.
That's a big part of it. We talked about it on this show a lot with different people.
Yeah.
And I wish I knew this when I was, like, I don't know, 23 or something like that. But, you know, it doesn't fucking matter how good you are.
You're right. It doesn't.
Like to some bands.
Yeah.
And musicians, whatever. Like, they want to be able to hang with you.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, you can have the mediocre guitarist that you're auditioning for your band, and is really cool, and, like, really cool to hang out with right away, or you can have the virtuoso guitarist who blew your mind.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, was so stiff in conversation.
Yeah,
and, like, almost, like, pulling teeth. You didn't even know if they wanted to be there, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Who are you going to pick? You're going to pick the cool to hang out with guitarist.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
just what's going to happen.
Yep.
So.
Exactly.
When did you realize that, by the way? Is that something you picked up on right away?
Just
like
being a good hang?
Yeah.
I always thought it was kind of a combination of the two, because, like,
okay.
you could be the coolest person in the world, but if you can't play, then it's, you got to do something else or do something about it. But, I don't know. It came very natural to me, like, the hang thing, because I'm always, like, I'm kind of a reserved person in most situations. So, like, I'm easy to talk to, get along with. I'm not, like, a jarring source in the room, like, oh, who's this guy, you know? But, so I think that's played to my favor. But I haven't really changed, like, or, like, viewed myself as, like, oh, I got to act a certain way to get people to like. No, I just be myself. And that's obviously, you know, you got to be authentic with any endeavor that you do or just everyday life. Just be yourself, and people who are receptive to that will gravitate towards you or
yeah, man.
Reach out. So, I mean, that's why I, you know, I had a lot of gigs playing drums, just different bands, which was cool, you know. But yeah, I think when I really started to get into that, it was probably like, I want to say like 5 years ago, like the active gigging, like not just like playing with an original band, getting the music really tight, and then mm-hmm. like going to, you know, play out and stuff like that. I always did like those paid shows back in the day.
Yep.
You know, I was like, covers? No way. No, but come on. Covers are great. You know, it's...
I honestly, dude, am burnt out from them from years of doing weddings.
Yeah.
But I also mm-hmm. had like physical issues that kind of was like, because you're playing for 3 hours and...
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
Most of that was technique issues that... You know, mm-hmm. just, and then the whole problem never healed itself.
Oh, okay.
So I still have that bad taste in my mouth for covers.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, no offense to anybody. If I go into a bar before times.
Yes, before times.
If I go into a bar and there's a cover band on stage, I want to walk out. I don't want to go anymore.
Yeah.
But no, it's somebody's birthday party and they chose this, you know, one of those things.
Yeah.
But again, like, I can't talk shit about doing covers without a doubt because it changed my playing.
Yeah,
for the better.
Absolutely, you know? You get a lot more comfortable with form and just being. I don't know your background, but like being a drummer, like a lot of drummers don't have the harmonic knowledge of like what's going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But just to be able to hear chord progressions and changes like that mm-hmm. is so beneficial for a drummer. So that's like a lot of thing I strive to teach my students as well. Like you don't need to like know like what a you know. I don't know, you know, a C minor 7, you know, whatever. Yeah. It doesn't. You don't need to know what it is, but you need to be able to hear when repetitions occur,
yes.
so you know where you are. You know, but yeah,
that's a good point, by the way.
Yeah, I think that's why it's really
because you can like unconsciously pick up on, oh, this is the bridge based on I heard it went to that chord,
right?
And like, I don't know what that chord is. In fact, I don't even need to know the key of the song, but I know where I'm at.
Exactly. Basically. That's so, because like you can't just be, I mean, I'm all about counting, but like when you you can't just like count bars for songs.
You
like,
just can't.
You have to use your ears and you got to trust that the practice that you've done will transfer over. And it will
that's
if you don't get in your own way, which is an ongoing, you know, struggle for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Myself included. You know, you always like get in your own way sometimes. At least I don't know if you've ever found that sort of thing. Like you're like, oh, this sounded great in this time, and then you're thinking too much, and then you know.
Yeah, it depends. It depends on I guess it depends on the gig. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If it's like an original thing and it's established that I'm allowed to have some expression.
Yeah.
And some freedom. It's trusted.
Right.
And it's not like I'm gonna go do some dickhead, you know, stupid fill.
Yeah.
It's, I'm going to try to be so tasteful. In fact, I want to like stimulate the music on stage.
Right.
For somebody else to do the same thing, maybe. But like sometimes you're just like, should I do that pattern that I've been fucking with? And then that's when you're like, I missed it.
Exactly.
I just kept playing the groove.
Yep.
And like my automatic pilot was just keep playing the fucking groove.
Exactly.
Don't take the risk, which is okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But I didn't get to test out.
You know, right,
and that must be an error in practice, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, so I did this like, I don't know, I feel like you need to really marinate on certain concepts for it to organically come out in your
beautiful
playing.
Word, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And like that timeline for the marination timeline or whatever you want to call it is different for everybody.
Yeah.
So like, you know, again, this for most people. I keep playing this beat, but it's
the best beat in the world.
The money beat, but it's burned into your subconscious.
Yeah.
So you could just do that, you know, have a conversation. That's how you know it's starting to happen. You know, like a lot of the stuff I've been working on now, it's like that five thing I was showing you, like it's starting to organically slip in to my playing a little bit. I'm not like forcing it. And I did this like, this thing called the Super Mario Challenge. I don't know who Jonathan Green is from. He's from Asheville, North Carolina. He's like a YouTube drummer. He's insane.
Is he?
Oh, check him out. He's awesome. Jonathan Colin Green. He did this. It was a Mario Challenge. So you play the melody of the overworld theme da-da-da-ba-da-da, on the ride or like on any surface while you do a five ostinato with your other limbs.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it was really, I would have to practice it slow again, but it was, you know, da 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 but under like. So like that's the first section. Next part. Yeah, I have to go over it again. This has been like months, but
what?
Doing that sort of stuff.
Holy shit!
That's why the five can slip into my playing because I worked on just this.
Well, yeah, I noticed that you people heard it, but I saw it. You fucked up the ride cymbal pattern, and I'm using "fuck up" like in quotes because you didn't fuck anything up.
Yeah,
because you kept your five pattern. It was like. It was that smooth. It's like control.
Yeah.
You didn't speed up. You didn't slow down. Right in the pocket still. Even like the phrasing of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, you just proved that for sure without a doubt.
Yeah. So like that is ingrained, and like the whole other stuff, like all of that. Are you familiar with like Benny Gribb?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know like the Benny Gribb language of drumming.
Yep.
So what I did was just I took. I'm thinking of that in 16s. One E and two. One E. So I'm thinking of that, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm playing all of the partials, practicing all the partials with my sure. right hand. So one E and a two E and a three E and a four E and a one E and a two E and a three E and four E and a one E and a two E and a three E and a, you know what I mean?
Dude.
And like where I stop there is because it has not solidified at that tempo yet. Like
yeah.
I drilled that with the right hand, like I looped those sections for a while. And just by going over those partials, that is the key to everything. Like Benny Gribb has it right. Did you hear about his new book by any way?
I have it.
Me too. I just started reading it.
I didn't start reading it yet, but the nice, beautiful green.
Did you get the signed copy?
I didn't actually.
Oh, okay.
I didn't get the signed copy.
I did.
Maybe I should have.
I don't know.
He's great. I mean, he's great.
Yeah.
Like, and apparently he's like super nice.
That's what I've
cool,
heard. Yeah.
Cool guy to talk to.
Oh, taking the partials and just running it against like a pattern like that, and hearing it over four, so beneficial. So like what I would do is, you know, if I were to get that back up to speed, I would notice where I stopped and be like, oh, what partial is that? What am I, you know, maybe it was just a fluke thing where I just, you know, slipped by me, but, I should review that partial, you know, and then just loop it over the hi-hat. And then I can't do it probably right now. But
I mean,
like,
it's totally cool. You're not on the spot to do it.
Yeah.
You've already proven.
Oh,
like, holy shit, you know. I mean, dude, like, this is also really cool to talk to you about this because, again, like, I knew you taught, but mm-hmm. I saw your skill of performance. Mm-hmm. I don't know about your teaching, but based on what you're telling me, you sound like you're a really thoughtful teacher.
Thank you.
It's just like, you clearly break down things for yourself to make yourself a better drummer, and you don't stop, it sounds like, to translate that to your students.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
You have to get on their level, and that's one thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Some people don't have that.
They
that
don't understand
ability.
That.
It's hard to, you know, like I started playing when I was like 14.
Okay.
So like I started later.
Yeah.
So like I can kind of relate to a lot of the beginning stages.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, I was there once, but like the people who have played since like two and they've like forgot how to not play drums.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, it's harder for them to teach. You know, most of the time, at least I would think so, because it's like, how do you relate? But yeah, the biggest thing like that partial stuff that Benny Gribb talks about, or the letters in his language are crucial. Like. Again, like doing all the displaced click stuff just mm-hmm. with the kick drum, you know, one E and a two E and a three E and a one E and a, you know, just going through all of the partials with the kick drum, just with an odd click, like that's just going to strengthen your time more. You're going to have more options. You know, and I always, with my students, I always start with freeing the kick drum kind of like in that grain. You know what I mean? And because I never like teach them like stock beats or anything. I teach them all of these, like what does this little rhythmic variation look like? This partial, you know, what does a quarter note look like? What is, when you do the one and the of a click, one and the of the 16th note grid, one, like, what does that look like? What does that look like in your head? Like they picture that and then they apply it to a limb while they do other things.
Okay.
And I always start with, you know, eighths on the hat and snare drum on two and four, cause everybody loves that.
Yeah.
You know, and, I feel like that's really beneficial, and I wish I kind of started learning that way.
Yeah.
That way, when I saw like this crazy beat, I was like, you know, I wouldn't be like, oh, I have to learn this and try to figure it out slowly. Yeah. Like my body was already kind of used to it because I practiced it.
Yeah.
You know?
So you would you agree you come from the mindset, because this is my mindset, it's like you clear what you just said, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wish I learned this at 14, 15, 16.
Yeah.
Because essentially what happened was you went through doors that you didn't need to go through, and you probably went down paths you're just like wasting your own time or developing bad habits or something like that. Like, we all go through that shit.
Of course, yeah.
So it's very important. It sounds like it's very important to you for your students to guide them away from those.
Yeah, yeah.
And like highlight why.
Exactly, exactly. You know? Like, I show them why I teach them all of these partial exercises. Oh, because you can learn this song. You know what I mean? Like, oh, look, you know, it's this partial combined with this one.
Yeah.
You know, just little things like that. You know, like Immigrant Song. Slower. Right, you have one E and a two E and a three E. Those are two partials next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if you practice both of them separately, you know, and then, you know, and you're just used to doing that sort of practice, and that's the consistent baseline of what you do.
Yep.
Putting them together is not going to be as tricky as if I just gave that drum beat to you and be like, okay, play this. And you're like, okay, you're counting the 16th notes, trying to play it out, you know.
Yeah.
Up to speed, and I always strive playing slow, too. Slow is incredibly beneficial. Everybody wants to play really fast, especially you know, when you're younger. And you know, I understand it's fun to play fast.
Of course.
Totally. But you deepen your understanding when you count and you play slow. Okay. And do you know who Dave DiCenzo is? I think his last name is DiCenzo. He was like in Modern Drummer.
Yes.
On the Modern Drummer Festival, 2008 or something.
He's got like one of these facial hair things down here.
He has this video on YouTube called Improving Your Time, and it's all about counting and like different exercises with accents of what you're counting and then clapping different things.
Okay.
And do you know who Chris Paparota is?
No, actually.
Okay, so he's this drummer from South Jersey, like Central Jersey. Minol endorser, I think he's 30. Yeah, he's 30 now, and he's fantastic. I took a lesson with him just the other
day.
What's
his name?
Chris Paparota. He's a Minol endorsee. He's a awesome guy. But because I was trying to talk to him about his flow practice and his approach to phrasing. Incredible drummer. But he was the one who turned me on to Dave DiCenzo to check out his video, because I had no idea who he was. And I don't know, I just feel like the counting thing out loud while you play is just really starting to open up doors for me. Like, I'm really starting to be really picky about it, like being able to count every note while I play. And it's I like see it now in fast motion a little bit in my head, like I have blurs of it,
because
it's starting to internalize when I'm starting to do different things. Like, I posted this one video about like this. I was like practicing to a loop, just trying different things, because sometimes I think too much and I just want to be free.
Sure.
So when you stumble, you find out why you stumbled, you pull that out. And I found it was like this 11 note group that I did in this form. So I took it out and I practiced like trading it with like a 16th note groove for like two bars. And then I did like an 11 uplet. In like really like 40, really slow, just so I can internalize the sound.
Oh, all right. So you did you essentially did a rhythm that was equal, 11 equal notes in
per
one measure?
In one quarter note.
In one quarter note.
Yeah, just to internalize it. And then like I was like, okay, that's cool. And then I took it and this week I practiced it in triplets because it's more natural. So then I did that sort of thing. But counting made that so much easier.
Okay.
Just one and a, two and a, three and a, four and a, dot, you know? And just doing it like that, it was so much, so eye-opening. And I just wish I counted more out loud back in the day. That's all I'm really trying to say.
Well, I mean, but it is, you're essentially going and giving an extreme detail as best as you can, because a lot of this stuff is internal. Like
Absolutely.
You said, you see it.
Yeah.
And it is difficult at first, because you're usually never asked to explain it.
Right.
But it's because you got there in your head,
mm-hmm.
and that's what you use. That's your way of seeing it. So, but like for your students in particular, what tempos like do you hold them to? You're just like, no, you're not going to go faster than, what would that be? Like, and not that they're in the beginning putting on a metronome, are they?
So, yeah, my first lesson, I have them with a metronome.
Get the shit out of here.
Yeah, yeah. So, I have like a whole drum book, like 2 years worth of lessons, at least, in that written out, I teach through. So, the first lesson is with a metronome.
Wow.
I asked them, and I make it really fun. You know, okay. And I teach all levels, like all ages.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's, you know, with younger kids, I make it a game. But like, all you got to do is count to four.
Okay.
On one, I do pad exercises first, and then the drums, like this groove, building this groove.
Yep.
Okay. And basically, every time they say one, they're going to do either sound number one, which is hi-hat and kick.
Okay.
Or sound number two, which is hi-hat and snare.
Okay.
Okay. And I don't really, like, we talk about how I hold the sticks briefly, but I'm not a stickler about it because I want them to understand the metronome and why we're using it like this. So
gotcha.
Anytime they say one, they play one of those sounds. So they have those clicks in the middle to help guide them.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And that really opens up. I don't tell them that it's whole notes or like any musical jargon. Just like play on that as best you can.
Okay.
Once they get that, I have them do the same sound alteration between both of those on one and three.
Okay.
So half notes. So it builds them up. And by the end of the lesson, I'm getting them to play quarter notes.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. And they're just counting out loud.
And a coordinated pattern too.
Yeah. It's just one.
Yeah.
Two. And as best as they can. You know,
okay.
Some people get it really quick. Some people have some trouble, but you just back off to this one. One, two, three, four,
yep.
One. And it's already calibrating just the count, the voice with the metronome and the limbs.
And the consistency of
yes.
that metronome, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's
it's like subconscious. They may not even, for years after that, right, realize the benefit of that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, first lesson, I'm like, guys, or whoever it is, the metronome's your new best friend. And if they're really young, I'm like, you're going to invite them to all your birthday parties. This metronome's going to be your best friend. Just to make it really,
it's gonna
you know,
be your
fun.
Best man.
Yeah. And then they're like, oh, I hate the metronome. Or they're like, oh, it's kind of cool. You know, I don't know. It's always different. But yeah, I mean, all my students recently and some of the new ones I've had, they've really gotten they've been very receptive to, and they usually are. So at the beginning.
So you have your, I'm similar, you have your method and you've, you know, lesson after lesson, year after year,
mm-hmm.
you're collecting data and you find out what works and
exactly.
you're just carving and sharpening until
yeah.
like getting those tools. I mean, just so right.
Yep.
That right there. Somebody told me this recently, somebody older,
mm-hmm.
teaching and performing for years said, you know, these students that you've had for 3+ years, let's say, you don't know right now, but one day you're going to have a moment where you're going to have a moment where you feel so, he's like, I don't know what that moment looks like, but you're going to feel so fucking proud and warmth of rewarding feelings
mm-hmm.
Because they're going to accomplish something like that. They may even reach out to you, like you don't even know what you're doing for them. And I thought about that. I'm like, and then now even in this pandemic, are you doing virtual stuff? Are you doing both in person and at virtual?
Yeah, we're doing both at the school. So
same with me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get into that, by the way.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
But virtually, like I imagine that having, because this is a parent told me this, that weekly half hour, like just 30-minute drum lesson for her son, let's say, was so helpful to keep order. During a time in which their attention spans are fucked, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my
because
gosh.
Because of this thing.
I'm sure you've had experience with some kids that are just like, just with the virtual lessons, just
yeah.
like staring like at something on the wall that
yeah.
you can't see. And you're like, hey, you know, pay attention.
They're
over
in
here.
Outer space.
Yeah.
They're in, they go to Mars with their attention.
Yeah.
And you got to snap them back. But so for you then, what was that transition? Because were you doing virtual prior?
I was not, no.
Same here.
So when we got when New Jersey was shut down, you know,
yeah.
I just, luckily I had this nice USB mic that I just
yeah.
hooked up to my laptop and just, you know, and it sounds decent over Zoom or Skype, whatever we use.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, is this room where you teach?
Yep.
Oh, this is fantastic.
I just wheel that thing right in front here.
Uh-huh.
The laptop's the camera. I have this to talk.
Yeah.
I could turn it on and off. And then I usually have a mic here to capture the drums. So.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I mean,
so like,
it's just what you have to do. You have to do it because
yeah.
you want it to be like, I imagine you accepted that you're going to get shit audio from them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yep.
You can't guarantee.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to deal with it.
Exactly. And then there's the lags and stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
you got to give them the best that
yes.
we can.
Yep.
because it has to be undeniable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It needs to feel like as close to an in-person lesson as you can. Because, you definitely, when you, especially in a situation like this, when you have a lesson with somebody with another drum set and you like really look up to them and you hear them play behind the drums and it's just thunder and you just feel it in your chest, like that's inspiring. That's the really cool stuff. You don't get that online,
You really don't.
And it's different. That's why, when live music comes back, it's going to be awesome. And, we go and see our favorite players. That's going to be really inspiring. Because, kids nowadays, they watch things on YouTube all the time. And there's a disconnect. And,
I don't know about that, though. Mm-hmm. Because I do find that it's just... there's so many more distractions for them.
Oh, that's...
Do you know what I mean?
So
true. Did you... Okay, I'm gonna name a website.
Okay.
Drummersworld.com or drummerworld.com.
Yeah.
When did you discover that?
My first drum teacher was like, you gotta check out this site. I remember going up to my old computer. It was like
a teenager, right?
Yeah, yeah. Probably 15, 16, around there.
I'm about the same, right?
Yeah.
And
yep.
Essentially, people, this was YouTube for drummers, I guess. But one guy curated a whole bunch of videos. And that guy, Bernard something, is...
I forget his last name.
This guy deserves a handshake.
He does.
and a beer, and
absolutely,
what I mean?
Yes.
Because he fucking changed my life. That website changed my life.
Yeah.
That's where you discover, Dave Weckl, for instance. That's where I just consumed every Steve Gadd video.
Yeah.
Steve Smith. So many drummers, right? And then new drummers would pop up. I remember Mark Juliana popping up in my attention because of that site.
Really?
That's awesome. You know what I mean? Maybe, I don't know when that was, maybe 2008 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But that was the catalyst for me searching out, always wanting to see a new voice, right?
Right, right.
And then obviously YouTube took the reins to that, and Instagram, of course, is amazing for that.
Of course, yeah. I mean, there's so many. First of all, now you know how many great players there are out there.
So many.
There's so many great players, and I think that can be problematic for people too, just because, especially someone coming up, because they're going to be like, oh, what's this cool lick that this guy's doing? I really like this weird odd thing that this guy's doing. I'm going to do that, and then they lose focus on, they're practicing too many different things at once, and they're kind of neglecting the essentials, which will build on all that stuff, and that will naturally start to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's great to look at that for inspiration, but you got to know there's a fine line where it's too much.
I did that to myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Why am I learning? Why am I trying at 16 years old to nail this stupid Dave Weckl lick? And I say stupid because it's so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so good so beyond my skill level at that point.
Yeah.
I have no business.
Exactly.
At
I know, but
16.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to try, but if you have a couple things, which is why I'm excited to read Benny Gribb's book, about just practicing those two or three things and just actually practicing it, not being practice this beat for a second, frustration fill or whatever like that. Sticking with it with the timer. That was a big thing I got from the 80-20 thing as well. Nate was always about timing your exercises and recording everything.
Oh, okay.
Everything. And
listening
then you
back.
Listen back and you're like, oh, I was a little early there on the E.
Okay.
Or stuff, stuff like that. Because listening, you should actually listen to your practice just as much as you practice.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Sometimes sometimes you just want to practice and be like, oh, it's good. And then you don't listen to your recordings, but it really does open up a lot of options of what you can be working on.
Of course. Yeah. I probably should be doing, I obviously could do it really easily.
Yeah, you just record.
Probably should be doing that. It's kind of like a comedian, listening back to their set that night.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
I'm sure you've done it with gigs before. You record gigs and stuff.
I actually have never done that.
Not once?
No, I've
really?
Never done that. No.
Oh, okay. You should try it sometime.
Probably try that. Because, and that's the other thing is there's all, all that logistical shit that goes beyond your own skill somewhat is stage volume, for instance.
Yeah.
Does this fucking crash cymbal or China cymbal work at that part? Is it just cutting out everything in the middle?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
that's, yeah.
Could be, yeah. Also, crowd reception to certain parts of the music, Did it sound like the crowd? I always think about that. Nowadays, I think about, because, all right, I want to get into this too, because we keep touching upon, like, dude, when music comes back, man, live music, because I'm stoked. Mm-hmm. But I have thoughts about that. I've been thinking a lot about this. Mm. So I am interested very, very much lately about what does the actual, we'll call him general crowd member who just walks into a venue or a bar and there is live music. Mm-hmm. Right, so the person who didn't go out to see it. Okay, what do they think about? In fact, not even they think, because it may not be conscious. What is their reaction to most live music that they see, and that they didn't plan on seeing? Hmm. What do you think? Do you think how much of it is positive reaction?
Yeah, I mean.
Without being too judgmental, obviously, I can get very judgmental.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like most like the average person nowadays who's like doesn't play music or anything, they go into a bar and there's a band playing, they may not really be receptive to it because everyone is so used to like the DJ type thing nowadays. Yep. Not to say that they'll hate it, but I don't think a lot of people are super like into the sound anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying from my eyes, for like the average person, like, yeah. I mean, there's always music enthusiasts, like, and there's a lot of them out there, and you know, people like to see live music, but I feel like at first it's like, oh, there's a band playing, you know, and then it's like up to the band to be like, no, we're playing. You're gonna listen. You're gonna feel it. And you're gonna like it. You know, it's up to them to like to bring their conviction.
There's a conversion that has to happen, right?
Yes, they're completely just like not down. Not I don't want to say not down, but they're indifferent to the music at first, the average person, and then as they sit there, they'll decide whether they enjoy it or not, you know.
And it might not take that long to make that decision.
Yeah,
it could literally be 4 measures or 8 measures or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I've noticed though is thinking about going back into everybody can go and perform, mm-hmm. and that means that like Beyonce. And you and I, in our own ways, can go and perform. It's interesting, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. But what we do truly fit into? Like for us, it fits into this artistic expression and this lifelong skill building that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But what is the crowd member getting? And can you, for instance, mm-hmm. in the groups that you play with, or I mean, you're the drummer. You're usually in a service role. You're providing something.
Right.
It's bigger than yourself.
Yes.
Obviously, you know that. Mm-hmm. And like, it's not in your control, what I'm about to ask. But like, can you guarantee that like that crowd member is getting something from the performance that you're a part of?
Ooh, like, can I guarantee? Is that what you're asking?
Well, I'm saying you can't, right?
Like, you
know what I mean? Like, I can't, like, you can't guarantee. But the group can. You know?
Like, yes.
And I even think, like, this could be even easier of a thought process for a singer-songwriter. But here's the problem. The singer-songwriter will go to sign up for a show. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. You're on the bill and you're middle act. Great. You have 30 minutes. And I find that, how many times have you seen this? And even bands, you watch a performance of 30 minutes of somebody playing their music for a crowd. And it's not very entertaining. And the crowd is not moved by it. But there still is that between songs.
Yes.
So the crowd is participating. Why are they participating?
Okay.
And why is the singer getting away with this?
Yeah, that's...
There's an unwritten agreement between that setup.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, you're here, and I have 30 minutes of your time, so give me all of your attention and listen to my music.
Yeah,
my artistic expression, and please follow me on Instagram and go buy my music. In fact, I'm selling my EP in the front and some merch, right? Like,
yeah.
But here's the thing: are these people? Do they care about your artistic expression, or they really want to be entertained?
I think if especially for somebody who's not known, I feel like they're probably there, honestly, because it's like a communal experience with their friends, not necessarily with the artist, the middle act. They may be going for their friends who are playing maybe after or before.
Yeah.
They're just hanging out. So it's up to the performer to provide, entertainment for them at first, because entertainment will lure them in. Like the reason why we love the acts and the artists that we love so much is because they're what they've created is special to us in some way, and it's gravitating.
Yeah,
you know. So like, you know, if whether it be musicality, just the message of the song, you know, if there's none of that connection, if it doesn't make the audience member or whoever feel anything, it's like, then there's, it's just them just kind of doing their thing up on stage, and there's a complete disconnect between audience and audience and the artist, besides that clap thing. That's just,
you know what, to go with what you just said, I actually think it goes beyond audience to artist, because the artist doesn't matter. It's audience to this live music thing happening here. Like the idea of live music.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Like you're dealing with people, these crowd members. Most of them don't have a knowledge base in music at all. Most of them. They don't know conceptually what's happening, right? Like, I always ask this to, because I only have this conversation with musicians.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you were dumb at music? Do you remember what that felt like?
Yes.
Like not knowing. And usually you can remember it by remembering the moment you discovered something.
That's true. Yeah.
There was a moment where you're like, And you can taste that moment right before the, that sounds sexual weirdly.
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? So like, but the crowd member lives in the space before the oh, man. They just don't know what's happening. So then, all they're doing is responding to stimulation. But if they're not being stimulated, you're not even a thought.
You are
not a thought. But what you represent, which is a performer on stage taking up 30 minutes of their time while they're waiting for their friend to go on or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or they just came to hang out with their friends, right? So I think what happens is I think that too many of those people are on stages.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
And it's not their fault because somebody let them. And there's nothing wrong with them wanting to pursue that. I have I don't want to be a Nazi about this. Like, it's like I want you to get better, right?
Right.
But there's no audition process, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually they look at like a venue, for instance, a booker. What do they look at? Followers? How do they choose this stuff?
Yeah, if you're getting like bar gigs and stuff like that, they're just. Yeah, I guess they'll look at followers a little bit, depending on the bar.
Yeah.
But if they sell a lot in drinks that night, then they'll usually call that band back. You know, that's usually how it works.
If you're really social and you bring a lot of people to the bar that first night, 100 people come out. Whoa, that venue's like, put them back, you know. But like, were they good?
Yeah, I think that's like second in line.
Right.
I think. Yeah, it's like, oh, do they make, like if I'm the bar owner or the venue owner, do they make me money? That's check number one. Even though, you know, some people have different ways they view that. But yeah, I guess most owners would be like, oh, this band's not making me money. I don't care if they're virtuosic or anything like that. Like they're not bringing in.
Or just like they're lower quality. Like I don't care if they're not, like you couldn't put them on a wedding.
Right,
to entertain a crowd, right?
Yes.
But they have a crowd, so they must have a fan base.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the question: does that 100 people come back the next time?
Well, yeah, that's another thing too. Yeah,
what I mean?
Because a lot of the times it could just be friends and stuff. Yeah.
And they brought 100. How many other people are in the bar? So is it 50 other people in the bar? Maybe. So you have 150 people total. Are those 50 people coming back for that group? You know, and how many people made the conscious thought like, I don't know, I'm just not into live music, because there was maybe two bands or two artists on stage that night for taking up 30 minutes of their time, and they had to do this in between. Because there's this, again, there's this unwritten agreement that the audience knows how to respond to. They want to be polite. Right. And I think their time and their attention is being abused.
I could totally see that.
I feel like this is a radical, it's like a really radical kind of idea. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I bring it up is because, circling back to when we get to go to fill up a place and be around each other, mm-hmm. and see a show, the only thing we have, man, the only thing we have, because we are entertainment, and TikTok is entertainment. So is Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, porn is entertainment, man. Like, yep. you are competing with all forms of stimulation. Netflix, Hulu. But going to see a sports game is also entertainment. So why should they come to fucking see us? Like, what do we have that they don't have?
Yeah.
What do we have that Netflix cannot replicate? All we have, and you know it because you can taste it right now, is that live music experience, that energy in that room.
Yes.
That fucking fires you up, man.
Yes.
When you're watching, like what's the last group you saw and you're like, oh, that was an amazing show. Oh, my God.
So there was one day in particular, or one show in particular, that I've probably the most excited I've been to go home and practice. It was like 5 years ago now. But do you know who Virgil Donati is?
Yeah.
Okay. So I saw him with his band at the Iridium in the city.
Great place.
I sat. Alton Holdsworth was there, and everything, and like just hanging out having dinner. But I was too. Have you said you've been there?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like a little jazz club, you know, just sitting down. And he's there with his huge, massive kit. And
Takes up most of the stage, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so polite the way he talks and everything. And I'm like two tables away from the front row with my girlfriend at the time. And he just starts playing. Like, it was when In This Life came out, which is like his 2013 record. And the attacks releases on the whole band. It was just so, like, at this well-oiled machine. And he's like improvising. And you know how he... never been like... Like, and just feeling all of that sound in, like, yeah. I'm just like trying to have a nice dinner, and it was just so inspiring. It's like, I need to go home and practice. But like, I guess more recently, probably seeing like Mark Juliana at the Blue Note. I saw him at the Blue Note with John Scofield.
Oh, you were at that? Right. I was at that, or he had a string of shows, right?
Yeah,
I saw that.
I was right in front of, it was Brad Meldow playing.
Brad,
I was right in front of him. So it was like him and it was me and my buddy.
That was a crazy show.
So good. And then I saw him at Rockwood with Beat Music, which was cool.
Beat Music, seen them a bunch, yeah.
Do you know J.P. Bouvet?
Yeah.
Okay, so I saw his band Childish Japes with Aberdeen.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, at Rockwood. It was Aberdeen's CD release party. And
I don't know Aberdeen, but I definitely know Childish Japes.
Yeah, do you know Adam Neely, the bassist, the YouTube bass music theory guy?
I don't.
Oh, you should. Yeah, he's like... What's he was really funny. Adam Neely.
I'll look him up. So you said Neely, you said?
Neely, yeah. It's N-E-E-L-Y. But yeah, he plays bass in that band.
Okay. Got him.
Yeah.
So you know what I'm talking about, right? So like that potent feeling.
Yeah, it's just...
We can make that happen for somebody, a crowd in front of us. You've done it. If you've been in, even especially if you've been in a cover band,
yeah,
it's easy to do with a cover band.
Yeah, yep.
But even, you know, I'm sure playing original music, you've done that, right?
Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You work on your skill to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Netflix can't make that come through your TV.
No, yeah, you're exactly right.
So why are we, because I also have this idea during the pandemic, why are people making albums? Like, save that material. Don't release it.
Yeah, yeah.
Make video content of you playing with your band or something. Put out a single here and there, but don't release it an entire album. Save it for when you can perform again. In my opinion.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, like when it's time, you have to unload on these people. You got to remind them why they missed live music. And it has to be like even more potent than before.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why you got to stay in shape during this time. You know, you know what I mean?
Push-ups. Yeah, man.
Yes, push-ups. yeah. But like, it's all like the people who are staying in shape, the musicians who are, you know, still practicing and just keeping the tools sharp, so to speak.
Yeah.
They're the ones who are going to get all the work and, you know, really reap the benefits of this time, you know?
Yeah.
Because when are you ever going to have this amount of time to focus on what you want to do, you know, when we start gigging again and everything, like, I have to admit too, like you were saying, you were burnt out on covers before. Like, I was pretty burnt out by the, you know, by the time it's just same covers over and over again.
Dude, when you start that feeling of you have to ignore the impulse to go on autopilot.
Yeah.
That's when I started to get really bummed out.
Yeah.
That's when I knew I didn't care anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
So I have welcomed this quarantine time as like a kind of a breath of fresh air in some respects. I mean, at least for musicians who are really taking this seriously, you know, I know it's an awful thing, but you can use this time to, you know, make yourself better at whatever, you know.
I'm clearly doing it, man.
Well, thank you.
Thank
you. I'm trying. But there's always more things, and the more deep you dive, I find, the more you're like, you got to work on it even harder. The more hyper aware you are of everything.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, which I just comes with the territory. That makes me like think about like people like Virgil Donati, like how. Like when you have that much like mastery over the instrument, like is there any like source of error? Like how do you feel? I wonder how he feels about his own playing on a daily basis. You know what I mean? Like,
you know, it's interesting though.
What?
Like that show, how many people were informed? How many people in that audience had an informed ear?
Oh, I mean, just if I had to guess, probably most of them. If I had to.
So that like hyper awareness of his ability, everybody was fluent. Most people were fluent in that, right?
Yeah.
But here's a. This is an ugly question, but it's truth, right? Okay. It's honest. Like how does that affect the common listener? Like so then.
Oh yeah.
You're right. You know what I mean? Like can we guarantee that Virgil Donati on stage in front of on a festival?
Yeah.
Whoever he's with, can he entertain? I'm sure he can physically do it, right?
Yes.
But the approach. Is that the strategy? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean,
because those people, all of that hyper awareness, they don't know any of it.
They're
oblivious to it.
Exactly.
It's like it would be like really high level cooking.
Yeah.
Like where it's like
same
that
type of thing.
Molecular bullshit.
Yeah.
Gastronomy.
Somebody was talking to me about like just different. This is one band I play with the guitarist and bassist, they are all about Gordon Ramsay and making like different recipes based on what he is. And I think he was mentioning stuff about like molecular levels of cooking, almost like
gastronomy or something
I mean, that's right? Wild. Something that's awesome.
Like I heard something the other day. First of all, have you ever had faux gras or whatever it's called? Have you ever heard this thing?
I've heard of it. I don't think I've had it.
It's like fattened goose liver.
What? Really?
Yeah. It's kind of weird.
Uh-huh.
It tastes so, you know, it's interesting.
Okay.
Right? Some people really love it, though, the flavor of it. Mm-hmm. Well, I just heard of a place that made faux gras, whatever, cotton candy.
Are you kidding? Really?
And apparently it was amazing, but like, dude, are you going to go out of your way for cotton candy? It's still fucking cotton candy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's true.
And how much does that cost?
Yeah, it's probably pretty.
Is it worth it? What are you paying for? Are you paying for like, oh, this is cute?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I always think like, for the common people, right? If we can convert listeners, like and new, you know, I don't know, can like a good group, in my opinion, that I feel like anybody could rock with immediately is like Hiatus Coyote.
Oh yeah, so good,
easy.
So, I've seen them like three times, just up front. Napalm's just
what a show, man.
Oh man, oh.
I saw him once. I saw him at I guess it was Irving Plaza, I think.
I think I was there.
Yeah. What's the guitarist's name? He's really good.
Oh,
Carter McClain plays with him.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about.
I do, but I'm name
blanking
is...
on his name. We will think of it by the end of this.
Yes.
It'll come to us.
Oh, Hiatus Coyote, they're so great.
But Hiatus Coyote, right? So like, you don't need to know anything about hip hop. You don't need to know anything about the angle of music that they're doing. Mm. You don't need to know any of that because they will entertain that crowd, right?
Yes.
But like, there are groups that you and I might even really love to see that a common person would see it and like go, "What is this?"
Exactly. Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely.
You know, and like maybe we all could start thinking about, okay, like even Snarky Puppy could be cool to watch. Yeah. I actually think the arrangements of the songs, of the music is so well done.
Oh, yeah.
The energy.
Yeah. Yeah, because, like, there's, like, I don't know, there's an accessibility factor to it. That's something that really interests me, too. Like, being, because, like, you know, there's the musician side of us. Yeah. We're like, oh, we want to do, like, the most technical thing because, like, why not?
Yeah.
But, you know, but, like, we want people to like it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And have it actually sound good.
Yeah.
So it's that blending of the two, like, the complexity and the intricacies of what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, just like little things like that. I always find that to be a fun challenge, like to take like a song that's very straightforward and just throw a little bit of, little bit, and just to kind of grab the ear a little bit. And I like that sort of thing. But you're right. Yeah. Like,
I've just been thinking about this constantly though. Like that it's, and then I even think about it, even how it reflects in how people perceive, like, okay, the Super Bowl is a big, gigantic performance, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but like, is it really about, like, what do they have to do to sell that halftime show?
Probably just put a big artist name on it, I guess.
They have to do more than that, right? They have to, like, get a fucking, they have to wow you with some visual factor.
Oh yeah, that too. I thought you were saying like initially, like how are they? So and so is going to be playing. So
yes,
yeah, okay. But I see what you're saying.
You see what I mean, right? Mm-hmm. Like them just playing isn't enough.
I know. Yeah.
So it's like the representation of a live performance is so unimportant to the masses that they actually have to dress it up.
Yeah. Yeah, you're so right.
And I by the way, that's to the masses, right? That's like a network TV level stuff, like millions at a time, right? But like we live in a nice area here. Again, when everything opens back up, we do have the opportunity. Little people, individuals, I think you can get people to respond just with that live music energy, and that you might actually have to throw away that want and that control for the cool shit.
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah,
and not. Totally, and not sell out and do bubblegum shit. Like, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, doing TikTok videos.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like the cheesy things. But, you know, I think you know what I'm getting at, though.
I mean, it's all about just, you got to do what feels good. And again, most people don't know what like a 5/4 polyrhythm is, or like weird cross rhythms, or, oh, I'm doing a paradiddle with my right side of my body and a double paradiddle with my left side of my body at the same time. Like, no one cares about that. Does it make them feel good? You know,
does it make them feel good?
That's what you got to start from, you know, at least as a musician, I think. Then you can slowly, you know, depending on what you're trying to do, you can slowly explore that territory. But it's always about, does it feel good?
Does it feel good?
Do your bandmates feel good? Does the audience feel good? I mean, you got to feel good too, but
yeah,
you know, I find that like even just playing the simpler stuff, which is, you know, our job, you know, as a company is most of the time, we hold everyone together. So the better our timing is, the better our foundation is, or the better our sound is, and obviously the good hang, like everyone else is going to feel better and sound better.
Yep.
And then they'll thank you. And they'll be like, it's nice. Like I'm privileged to play with some great, great musicians that are just excellent soloists. And a lot of times I'll just hold it down. Sometimes I'll throw in a little something, I want them to feel good, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's, I think, like, I was always, like, when I was growing up, I hated public speaking and everything, like, you know, doing projects in front of people, like, in class was just ridiculous.
Don't ask me to read, please.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, oh, it was awful. Yeah. But I've gotten a lot better with it, you know, as I've aged. But the drums kind of helped me with that as well, because, like, maybe it's because, like, I'm in the back and I'm, like, barricaded by these things that I felt better about it. But, like playing in front of, like, a bunch of people. You know, I did Battle of the Bands, where I played at Starland and stuff. So like that wasn't scary at all. But like reading in front of like a class was just like, awful. You know, so back to what I was saying, as long as you make it feel good to the average person, you're just going to be more successful as a musician, I think. You know,
it's funny though, the way that it's interesting that the role of what we do is you're the expert in the room every time you're on stage.
It's true. Yeah.
Same with me, right? Yeah. Like, you and I are not going to be on the same gig.
Right, yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We would love that.
That would be sick.
But, you know, like, it's not necessary.
Right.
But we also know, that's why drummers I get along with the most, And you can argue that we like compete for maybe the same gig, there's no competition. I feel zero competition with drummers. I feel nothing but like
camaraderie.
Camaraderie, and like I'm always excited. Like, holy shit, that was fucking cool. Yeah. So when you were playing before, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, I totally agree. You know. There's no like, at least I find in the drum community, online and in real life, that we're very receptive to each other. And we're just like, dude, that's cool. I like that a lot. You know, and you build off each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when I went down to South Jersey and I played with that guy, Chris Paparota.
Okay.
First of all, he's unreal, this guy. Like he's friends with Mason Guidry. Do you know who Mason Guidry is?
No, I don't.
You got to check out Mason Guidry. He's another New Jersey local. He is unreal. Like absolutely unreal. Like how fast he moves and how good of a feel he has. Oh, God. It's like M-A-I-S-O-N. And G-U, it should come up after you say that, Guidry. But, they're all, like, friends. But I've always liked Chris's playing, so I hit him up just like, hey, can I, like, come and, like, have a lesson from you? And, like, we exchanged some ideas, and he was just like, yeah, I mean, because I'm very, like, analytical, as I was showing you before. I'm very analytical about what I'm playing, and sometimes I like to get away from that. And he was, like, completely, like, not like that. He didn't come from that.
He
was saying, he's just like, it's about feel, and just like he likes all that stuff, but his playing's just off. So I just wanted to know like his approach to like how to flow on the drums and how he phrases stuff. And he's like a fusion cat, but like he plays like all sorts of he's so good. But his approaches were really cool. But
we were talking about we're the experts on our instrument and we have good camaraderie.
I was just telling him how much I appreciate his playing, and it was just cool to hang out with other drummers. I never really did that. I never was like growing up, I never like played with other drummers. Like this one band I was in, the singer was actually, he was before I like kind of knew how to play, and I can kind of thank this band for getting me on track.
Sure.
Because like lessons didn't help me out as much. It was just locking myself in the room with these guys playing to a metronome for 2 hours a day during the week and then 4 hours each day on the weekend for like 2 years.
Wow.
And it's just his own music, hard rock stuff, hitting as hard as you can. But we got really tight, and like I really understood, got a jump start with the metronome. So that was like 2 years into my playing, and I was like, awesome. But that's really like, he was a better drummer than me. You know, he's just like, oh, do it like this. His dad played and everything, but he was like a vocalist. He'd play everything. Awesome.
Oh, one of those cats.
Yeah, he's one of my great friends. Mike that's D. Cool. He's awesome. But
that's cool.
I thank him for a lot. But I never like sat in front of drummers and like played like Shed It or anything. I've done it like a couple times, like when I worked at Guitar Center a little bit.
Oh,
I would play with some of the other guys there.
Yeah.
This guy named Gishard G. Do you remember G?
Oh, God. I love G.
Yeah, me and G used to play all the time.
He's a motherfucker on the drums, man.
Yeah.
That dude, he actually came. That's so funny. You reminded me of this. Yeah, one summer we were jamming and he came over. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever been to I had a house with Brian. Ken lived there. It was in East Orange. I don't know if you've ever been to that house.
No, I haven't.
East Orange.
Yeah.
Well, we had a nice little basement area set up and I had two drum sets set up. Mm-hmm. And G came over to hang and eventually started jamming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dude. Yeah. The energy that dude plays with.
Oh, yeah. Just the, it was so good.
Have you seen him play piano?
No, I haven't.
Disgusting.
Oh, I hope, I haven't talked to, when I left, I was like, oh, we should get a beer. Like him. Zach Loss.
Zach's really
good.
So
me and Zach used to play a lot together. Okay. Yeah, he's awesome. And Mike Goriep, I don't know if
I like Mike a lot.
Yeah.
He's so a really nice, really good player.
Yeah,
nice
we played together before, but like I was like, oh, we should get, because I worked in the ops department in the back.
Okay.
So like we all started there. I would play with G occasionally, and it was just fun to like trade some, because I had some things, but he had some things too. It was cool to like, kind of just build off of each other.
Dude, it is the best. It's the best to just sit, so chill, and man, I've made like friendships for people that we don't live near each other based on that type of cool camaraderie. Like,
oh yeah, if I didn't play music, I feel like I would have like two friends.
same here.
You know, like,
yeah.
Everyone at, like Guitar Center.
My parents.
Yeah. Right. Oh okay. Man.
Yeah. Okay, man. All
right. Yeah, like, oh, Guitar Center was awesome just for the fact, like, meeting all those cool people.
Yeah, man. It's the same for me. I could talk shit about the job, but, like, I made some great lifelong connections, without a doubt.
Exactly, they're cool. They're really cool.
I wanted to ask you just, because I do want to get playing a little bit.
Okay.
It'd be cool.
Yeah.
But I was going to ask you, like, If you could think, it's like think of quick fire. It doesn't have to be perfect, but like what are, we could do things like what are songs that lit you up as a up and coming young drummer, like when you first started?
Okay, so like the first song like that really got me going was As I Am by Dream Theater. It's off track one on Train of Thought. And I remember getting it for Christmas and listening on my uncle's like Windows Media Player. And you know like how they have like the crazy like forms and stuff. So it just opens with like boom, down, down, like the tritone is just like Mike Portnoy doing that song. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. You know, was it
double bass?
Yeah. I came from like that background, like Pantera.
Really?
Yeah, like Vinnie Paul was one of my I used to not hold the drumsticks right, and like I would just like get blisters all the time, and then like now I have good
well, that's the thing I was gonna say. You don't hit hard. You have really nice technique. Like you could fly, and you look effortless.
Thank you.
And it sounds great, of course.
Thank you.
But I wouldn't have never guessed is what I'm saying.
I could play fast, but like when I started studying with this jazz drummer occasionally in upstate New York, he was like, yeah, this is gonna fuck you up a little bit, but try this, like just like slight adjustment in how to hold the stick, using this knuckle instead of the first knuckle not going farther down. That opened me up, and like all of this stuff, like ceilings and full strokes and like down strokes, and not adding any extra motion to the stick, like I don't really practice the molar much. It's called the Adler technique. Do you know who Henry Adler is?
I've heard the name.
Yeah, so he used to work with Buddy Rich and study with Buddy Rich, and this guy used to like took a couple lessons with him when he was alive. This is his tech. These are his techniques. So it's probably a combination of a bunch of things, but it's mostly limited to wrist motion.
Wrist, yeah.
But I find that you're right. I feel like it feels more liquid, fluid.
Yeah, you don't look like you're working hard at all.
Yeah, I don't.
And I see what you're doing. I go, he's working hard. Like clearly that's hard work there, but your technique is so good.
Thank you. Yeah, it's just a process that you just keep building on, you know.
So Dream Theater lit you up. Okay. Mm-hmm. What's something else if you can, something that maybe you could like demonstrate.
Sure.
Like this is something that, you know, I couldn't wait to learn this, for instance.
One thing I thought was really cool was taking a double paradiddle, like you know Thomas Pridgen.
Yeah.
So like taking like a double paradiddle, but like putting on the ride and then putting the kick drum with him. You know, and trying to play it fast. You know? I thought that was the coolest thing growing up. I was dude. This is cool. You know, I actually haven't done that in a long time. But
was that when he was with
the Mars Volta?
Mars Volta.
Yeah. That's when I got in.
Dude, there's a live performance with him with them, and he's playing, and it is disgustingly good. Like, and that's that energy I'm talking about. It was so raw, dude.
Yes, he slams those drums, but he can also be so gentle with those drums.
Yeah,
which is awesome.
Never seen anything. I remember when like he was on drummerworld.com.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I remember
like
the guys I saw
the whole site. I remember it was almost like we're like, who's this fucking guy? Holy shit! Never saw anything like it. So it was almost like a gospel chops guy playing in a what are they, metal? Prague?
I would say Prague. Yeah. Prague? Like Mars Volta. Like alternative Prague-y stuff. And just like listening to him talk. Like taking from Thomas Pridgen the finger control exercise. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but trying to focus on each finger instead. So he was basically like, okay, so you just do four strikes on the ride cymbal with one finger and then add another finger. So I'll demonstrate some. Ring. And then pinky.
And you take the ones off, right?
So that's what that was a modification I did, but he just kind of added them on.
And okay.
So I would just practice on the hi-hat.
And the goal is the moment, it never stops.
Never stops. And the wrist does not move.
He's doing eight on every, and then he was doing four. Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And again, the speed's not the goal. It's the rebound.
Rebound.
That is the key. The hardest thing a drummer has to do is pick up the stick.
Yeah. Everybody who doesn't play drums, drummers are notoriously lazy pieces of shit. We sit down and we want the stick to do most of the work for us.
Yes.
And yeah. nowadays we want to bring as little equipment as possible.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, exactly. But that was one thing that really changed my, or I guess kind of helped with my speed with my right hand.
Sure.
You know, doing it with the left too.
Sure, yeah.
You can do any group, you know, you can go one, two, three.
It's hard with the left at first when you grow up righty.
Did you ever get down with the New Breed book?
I have. You know, it's funny. I have it, and I just never.
Yeah, it looks really cool. And I mapped, like, because I'm so anal about everything, I mapped out, like, how long it would take me to follow everything. It would be, like, 3 years of just, like.
And that's the one where it's like, playing. It's set up so that you can play lefty.
Yeah,
and righty.
Yeah. He calls it territorial rights. Like, okay. He has a floor tom over here, too. Which is so the limbs will never cross, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Logistically, but. Yeah, he just, like, has all these different sets of ostinatos that he liked over the years.
Sure.
And just practice reading melodies, which is kind of what I try to adapt into teaching my students, not really thinking about, like, a drum beat, like the whole picture.
Yeah,
just like being able to see each individual line and read it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's a lot helpful. I wish I learned sight reading a little bit, you know, like that growing up. But
that's all right. So now that, I mean, plenty of time in the pandemic.
Yes, yes.
So.
Yeah.
Anything else, like, as far as songs that you heard when you were younger or even now? Songs that you're like, I always go back to playing this track because I feel like it's a good marker of, can I make this sound good or anything like that?
Well, so when I was working at Guitar Center and talking with G a lot, he gave me a list of, like, hip-hop songs to practice to because I never did that. I was like, playing to metronomes and locking with that. He's like, try jamming to some of these. And, like, one track that I really liked was Break Your Neck by Busta Rhymes.
Oh, okay.
And just, like, groove, like, just shredding over, just doing whatever over that and just locking in. That was really fun. But
what's the bass groove for it? Like, what's the main, if you can remember?
The mic's a little in the way.
That's okay. Gotcha.
That's basically what it is, and that's what the hi-hat was doing too.
Okay.
Like the electronic sounds. And I would just do that for a long time. Now I just try to do it with random songs, and I also got FL Studio, and I was trying to just program my own loops and get used to that, like, that sort of thing. It's completely different than Pro Tools, so I'm like, I have to, like, relearn all the quick keys and everything. But I mean, I think really it's just a lot of just, like, listening to the guys that I inspire to, I mean, that I take inspiration from is really kind of motivating me. Like that guy, Chris Paparota, his band Narbot is awesome. He's Narbot, like Shred the Gnar, you know.
That's cool. Let me look him up.
Yeah, so they're super cool. He also has his own solo project where he plays everything. Guitar,
one
bass.
Of them?
Yeah, yeah, he's great.
One of those guys?
He's great.
God, those people piss me off.
Yeah, he's awesome.
But in a great way.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Here, I got them right here.
And, like, anything Nate Wood does, like, with four, like, I mean, you've seen him play.
it's hard to unpack still. It's still hard to, like, you're just like, have you listened to the album?
Yeah. Oh, on repeat. Yeah, it's so great.
Usually when I see shit like that, I go, okay, you're doing that because it looks cool and it's a gimmick, right? And it's not listenable, though, because you're just doing too many things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
His album is listenable.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
Have you seen him do that live?
No, I haven't. He opened for, I think, March at LPR in the city, and I did not go to that show, and I'm really upset about it.
I'm lucky I got to see him. I was at New Blue, the new stage one, and where they have, like, the, like, bleachers behind the stage. So I got to sit behind him.
Oh, man.
And I saw everything. I mean, the guy's on another level of how he operates.
Yeah, it's absurd.
I'm not gonna lie to you. I think that I secretly think he's the best drummer of all time. Like, right now.
It
always changes for me.
Yeah,
by
yeah,
the way. But for he's done some things. There are some videos. There's a video of him playing with Tim
McFave.
The guitar. Not him. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's great.
He's fucking awesome. I love him. I think his name's Tim. He's a guitarist. Whatever. That group. Mm-hmm. And the guy, Evan Marion, the bassist, is playing with them. they're at the 55 bar and Nate's playing drums and they're improvising through this guy's song. Really kind of cool riff, you know? And he just starts taking some like I'll play a little bit of the groove, but it's, you know, he's playing shit like, and by the way, the hi-hats.
Oh,
the whole
really?
Time, like, oh, right? Man. But he's just doing like a. And then he starts shredding, like all these 30-second notes thing, right? Mm-hmm. But it's butter. It's so smooth. The groove is there. He's stimulating the music. The crowd's going, woohoo! Like, it's that type of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
When it could have been just catastrophe.
Yeah.
Right? What you're injecting into that, you don't, it's not needed.
No, but it's, oh.
But he, it's a gift when it's right. I mean, it's a true gift. And that clip, I can't tell you how many times in the last how many months.
Check it out.
I'm going to send it to you.
Please do.
It's unreal. Like, I still can't figure out what he's doing.
Oh.
It's one of those things.
I'm gonna have to try to figure it out now.
You're gonna figure it out, and we're gonna do another episode.
Yes.
Oh, and you're gonna be like, okay, Anthony, count one. And this is gonna be a drum lesson.
Oh my god.
Recorded drum lesson.
But that actually kind of brings me back to what you were saying before. Like,
yeah.
The technicality. Like, he got something out of the audience
by
doing that sort of thing. He invoked some sort of emotion. Now, granted, most of the people that probably go to the 55 bar are musically. In tune, you know what I mean?
And you're probably right, yeah.
But like just to go off like that and be confident with it, that's exciting for the listener.
Dude, you know how many people popped, I mean, in the camera angle of it, you know how many people whipped out their phones in that moment? Because it was one of those things, like, I can't just sit and watch this. Like, this needs to go on Instagram. And there are different angles of that same performance that people uploaded. Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm usually not that kind of person who... This moment's amazing live music wise. Mm. I'm going to pull out my camera. I always am like, no, fucking absorb it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Me too.
Like, you're capturing nothing.
Yeah.
Like on that camera.
Yeah.
Right.
You got to feel it.
You got to feel it. Right. But in that moment, though, it was almost like, you're not going to hear this ever again.
Mm.
Like this isn't written down. This is all improvised shit, you know. So, yeah, I got to send you that clip.
Oh, yes. Please. That'd be cool.
Let's play a little bit.
All right.
I want to, let's see. All right, I want to show one tune that really, like, still, I feel like I learn from constantly.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Funky Drummer. I mean, the Funky Drummer break. Do you know about, like a... It's a James Brown tune from probably the 70s, 60s. And it's a whole like 9-minute song. They're jamming, right? And it sounds like they don't know why they're jamming to it, because he's just going, "Hey ho," like, you know what I mean?
Okay,
like,
yeah.
Right? And he's just riffing, right? But he just loves the groove. And then at one point he's like, "We're gonna everybody duck out and give the drummer some. Yeah, let him do a couple bars." Like, and he's just riffing. He's like, "When I count off, everybody drop out. A one, two," and he counts the drummer, and the drummer just plays by himself, and he plays that groove, and it's 8 measures of gold, man.
Yeah, that's sick.
To the point where it is one of the most sampled beats.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many songs that have that beat on it. The guy's name is Clyde Stubblefield.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's like a tune, and that's like some of the shit that I, like the hip-hop type stuff. Like, I'm trying to, see where I spend most of my time is I'm trying to get those, like, what makes those hip hop samples like feel so good and danceable?
Right.
I want to create that.
Right. Yeah. No, of course. Of course.
You know, it's so hard. It's so difficult.
Yeah. Absolutely.
What's something, though, like currently, more musically, like maybe something in one of the bands you're playing in or songs that you're learning? Like, what's something you're working on?
Well, I mean, I'm kind of playing with, one of the guys I work with and a good friend of mine, and this came up with for one of the parts. It's pretty cool.
Cool. Nice, dude.
Just, you know, stuff like that and just improvising with it. But that was you know, kind of, I guess more, I don't want to say broken stuff, but like alternating backbeats and everything. Yeah. Which, and this is one thing I've been meaning to do for a while, but like taking like a stock, like a new backbeat that I want to learn and run it through freeing my kick drum with it. So for instance, if I want to do like more, like a 20 and a 2 and a 3 and a 1 and a 2, like that. Like that type of snare drum placement, sure, practicing just going everywhere with the kick drum with it. 20 and a 3 and a 3 and a 4 and a 20 and a 3 and a 3 and a 4 and a 3 and a 3 and a 4. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
stuff like that.
Of course.
I've been meaning to do that. But yeah, just kind of breaking out of the 2 and 4 thing on the snare drum all the time. Because yeah, a lot of funky stuff has that alternating. Like this, just on the and or something like that. And just being a little bit more... Like, I could do it, but I just want to be a little bit more fluent in keeping it there.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. But, yeah, just really, like what you were talking about, just kind of digging in and playing, like, one idea for a while and just really trying to zone in on the idiosyncrasies and the feel.
Yep.
I'm all about that sort of thing.
Dude.
Yeah. It's like, and, you know, and trying not to think about it too much as you go through.
As you're doing it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can't, it's funny. Here's a question. Do you think that when you perform, how much do you think... when you're truly performing?
How much do I think?
Yeah.
You know it's gotten a lot better. Like, I don't think as much nowadays, but...
So exactly what I just... That's why I asked that.
Yeah.
So the answer was, you are not... You're in your mind, I don't want to think.
I don't... Yeah, you're not... Yeah.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you think, one, you're not in the moment anymore. And two, that's where, like, the room for error starts to happen.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always going to be there. And, it, you know, we're humans and we're always, like, you know... trying to analyze ourselves in some ways, you know.
Yeah.
It's a real gift when you can just like let go.
It's like talk to a chick. I mean, like,
exactly. You gotta
if you're in your head going, I mean, what's my face doing? You know, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, should I raise my eyebrow? You know.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
One thing, one piece of advice that Chris gave me actually for like flow and just not thinking.
Sure.
He got from Nate Wood, which is just like pick a spot on the room and just stare at it. Like that little, like I can stare at like one of these little metal like screws here and just, you know, just stare at it locked, and then it kind of just turns off the rest of your like, oh, what am I doing here, what am I doing here, you know.
Yeah, because you're in that state of musical presence,
right? But like
your ears are your main information source.
Yeah,
right. I guess,
have you ever read The Inner Game of Tennis?
This is the second time I've heard about this book.
So like,
yeah,
in that book, the author breaks up the self into two. I think it's this, I'm not confusing with another book, but the self one and self two.
Okay.
Self one is the one that likes to be like, oh, I'm going to do this and this. And it's like the orchestrator, like the showy, the ego.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And self two is that innate just ability to do things that if you were to get out of its way, would be able to do amazing things. Like, I'm sure you've done stuff on the drum set before where you're like, you surprise yourself and you're like, oh, that was cool, especially in retrospect. But if you like learn, it gives you like ways to get your self one out of the way, because your self one tries to tell self two what to do.
Be like, it's like the critic, right?
Yes, yes. And if you like put its attention on something else, whether it just be looking at like something, that's a good way to start to get into that sort of mindset.
Here, here's a cupcake. Go away.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You when you said about a backbeat that's not consistent on two, like you just, I recently rediscovered this song by Q-Tip.
Okay.
It came out, and I remember being a kid and it being like on MTV playing when they played music videos, right? It's called Breathe and Stop. And the beat, it's, man, it is like so deceivingly difficult to groove, but this is what it is. I'm sparingly adding those because I know that this is there, but there's also like maybe Shaker or something, because it's like a hip hop track.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, and then I can't figure out if the kick drum to snare and even that, I can't tell if it's totally swung, if some of the notes are swung and some aren't, because some of the notes are definitely straight.
Yeah. Oh, so have you heard about this idea that people have been talking about called quintuplet swing?
I think I know what you're talking about, but I can't wait to hear your explanation.
I mean, I don't really practice it too much, but when I was doing that whole Mario Challenge thing, it kind of got into that realm.
Sure.
But so quintuplet swing. So when you divide the quarter note into five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's like the Hip Dilla stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Or it's like kind of based off that. But quintuplet swing is where you accent beat one and beat four of the quintuplet partials.
Okay.
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, yes. 5. One. So you get that yes. lilt. It's the drum.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah.
You don't. It doesn't really sit at its best until it's at a past a certain tempo, right? Like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like.
See, that's just me feeling. I'm not really counting quintuplets, but yeah. I don't know. I've been meaning to explore that further because again, that will open up your ability to hear five more.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're playing it in 16th notes.
Yeah.
So even like, so what you could do, all right, hear me out. So
no,
what if we do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2. So. And then, you can move the kick drum through the quintuplet partials.
Oh, so like,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1.
So, we were.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And that, I got you.
And then you really start to, like, I mean, I haven't really done that too much, but that would be a cool exercise if you want to get into, you know. Some of the hip hop stuff.
Definitely,
that could be
dude.
That could really open up your freedom and expression in that sort of.
You're right. I mean, that chill hop stuff. I don't know if you ever put on one of those stations.
No, I mean, I think
it's instrumental shit,
like lo-fi hip hop stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's sick stuff.
It's so much of the feel of what you just did, yeah. Right? Like where like a late snare or an early snare,
yeah.
And is this swung? It's kind of in the middle. Yeah, I love that stuff, man.
Yeah.
So that okay. So the. You know what? Now you're reminding me. There's a way of doing something similar, but in seven.
Okay.
But I never practiced it. But I might have seen a video in passing.
So like a swing, like a
seven swing, same concept.
Okay. So I mean, what could we do?
Trying to think.
So it would probably be beat five.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3. But let's make it more, you know,
sure.
Chill. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It would be cooler. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I just made up that pattern. Yeah, yeah. 1, 2, 4. Again, just count out loud while you do it.
Yeah. I can't.
1, 2, 3, 4. Wait. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1. That's cool.
Yeah.
You know.
That's kind of funky. Yeah. It kind of sounds Latin-y.
Yeah, it
actually,
does.
Kind of.
But think about like cool. if you wanted to get into that, then again, you could do all the partials of the septuplet grouping. But what I found even, you know what blew my mind the other day, which is, you probably have known this, but I just made the connection. Like if you're thinking of quarter note triplets, you know, 1 and 2 and 3 and in the parallel like polyrhythm,
yeah.
Like you're playing eighth notes with that quarter note triplet. The quarter note triplet is eighth notes. So like the quarter note triplet in a 4/4 bar is actually eighth notes in a 3/4 bar if you're counting sixteenths. So yeah, it could be 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1e and 2e and 3e and 4e.
Oh, fuck.
And I did that when
because shit.
It blew my mind. And
yeah.
Then, like, offset, you know, like the everybody wants to rule the world beat. The,
yeah.
Like that type,
yep.
Like the offset one.
Yeah.
It's just 16th note off beats. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1e and 2e and 3e and 4e and.
So wait, do the.
So
sorry,
I'm marking the pulse in 4/4 with my right hand on the hi hat.
Yeah, do that. Do the one when you switched it again, because I.
Okay, so I'm gonna count it in 4/4 triplets and then switch to 3/4 16th notes.
Okay.
Not changing what I'm playing.
Okay.
So 1 and 2 and.
So you're doing like three against four and one.
Yes, but hearing it from each side and counting it out loud. Everyone knows the... polyrhythm.
Yeah, yeah.
But really hearing it from each side. I always had trouble hearing it from the triplet sides.
Yeah.
And just doing that, I was like, wait. Offbeat quarter note triplets are just offbeat 16th notes in the parallel.
That is a mind fuck.
And I was like, this is a relatively recent discovery. I never really just clicked.
Did you feel like Thanos in Endgame?
Yeah.
Like life is different now.
But like it's just like little things like those little aha moments.
Yeah.
That was my latest one. I was like, oh my gosh, that makes it so much easier. So now I'm like going down, you know, making loops in 3/4,
okay,
but thinking of it in 4/4.
Okay.
Always. And then like, but I can hear the 16th note like realm is easier for me to comprehend
now.
But playing 4/4 triplets will strengthen my vocabulary in triplets and allow my vocabulary to transfer between both feels.
And that's what all this is about, vocabulary, right? Essentially, it's like your ability to communicate at free will.
Yeah, but like, oh, polyrhythms, I never thought of it like that, to actually count it from the other side while you play something.
Yeah.
Because that opens up a whole new option.
That's right.
Whole new set of options.
Would you say that it's atypical of the entryway, it's atypical of a it's like area that nobody wants to do the work to figure out kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
They're like, oh, I could do they could do the physical thing, but actually to count all of those ideas, you know, is a different animal. But that's where the real gold is, and I'm just realizing that.
Yeah, because the metronome being your best friend thing, the thing is with the metronome, you can't. Tell me if this makes sense. If you're relying on it for time, mm-hmm. you're not using it right.
Right, exactly.
Yep. It's just you're using it. It is a tool.
A crutch. It can become a crutch.
It could become a crutch. The way that you're using it is you're working on your internal time, like your quarter note, right? By placing it on like the E and the R, or actually. Am I wrong about this? You put out a video, and it might be in the last 3 months, mm-hmm. where you had it on like one of the triplets.
Oh, the upbeat triplet. Yeah. So
was it the middle triplet or the third?
I've done so.
You've done them all.
Yeah. Yeah. The middle triplet I haven't done as much, but the upbeat triplet. That, so again, that's an 80-20 thing.
That's like a
one, a two.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck. Let's do this. You want to demonstrate a little bit of it? I mean, I'll do the best I can.
Keep going. I want it, a two and a three and a four. One and a two and a three and a four. One and a two and a three and a four and a one and a two and a three and a four and a one and a two and a.
Oh, yeah. Did you try to fuck?
I tried to switch the counting while I did it, but yeah. So,
man.
Again, you could take this stuff in so many different ways, and it's always humbling. Just letting you know, always humbling.
Yeah, I'm humbled right now,
but
because you're playing shit that like I've never really sat down to practice.
Dude, try setting the metronome to a different spot.
I definitely gotta do that.
Like 60, but just make it the That's yeah. And what I do is. If you notice in some of my videos, I put the accent on the metronome. I use the tempo app.
Oh, yeah. Because you'll hear...
Yeah, so the accent is usually the last partial of whatever subdivision I'm playing in. That's
so you
an
do it on
thing.
The... You do it on...
It would be the of four and a bar of four. Like, say if I'm doing offbeat 16ths, it would be the of four. Or if I'm doing swung triplets, it would be one and two and three and four and high click.
Oh.
Yeah, so it kind of makes me really feel that... More. That's totally a Nate Smith from 80/20 Drummer. Shout out.
Gotcha.
Do the course. It's good.
Yeah.
But no, it's awesome. It's really, I don't know. It's fun for me.
That's the other thing. This is a never ending. You're discovering.
Yeah.
It's like you're on an island and you just found new rations somewhere.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I got like, you know, 300 more days here.
Exactly.
It's endless. It's as music changes too, because that's the other thing. The music informs this instrument.
Exactly.
Most, right? Yep. So, and like you probably have a different approach to how when you sit down on these things than I do.
Yeah.
Based on what you music stimulates you, right? Like, you know, I mean, I can't tell you the last rock band that made me go, oh, I want to go play.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get that. Yeah,
been a couple of years. That's it. That's all I mean by that. But like hip hop and electronic music, constant.
Yeah.
Or like some of the fusion cats, definitely.
Yeah. Without man. Are you a fan of like Aphex Twin and all those?
I mean, I have listened to it, but I love drum bass and
drum
jungle.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
That's cool.
JoJo
Mayer.
I just love like the effect of it. Like, because what is it? It's a sample.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then they just fuck around with it. But it's the same time of playing that beat that you hear over and over again. So that means that your ability to be that you have to be that consistent.
Yeah.
And that's just so damn hard to do.
I know. Yeah, it is.
Right? So it's like, that's what you're practicing. And that it just takes so much fucking... I mean, I could...
Yeah, you sound great, by the way. And all your cymbals and kit, everything sounds awesome.
Thanks, man. Dude. I'm trying.
Dude, I'm sounds trying. Awesome. Yeah, super
But yeah, tight. You're killing it, dude. Fucking Jesus, man. God.
But that really blew my mind, though, the eighth note or the quarter note triplet thing being in straight eighth notes in the 3-4. Like,
I would have never discovered
that. And then that got me thinking, like, with the quintuplets. Like, what if you just accent every other note in a quintuplet partial? You're still feeling eighth notes in some parallel.
That's right. But 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3.
Right,
four,
but
five,
like one. In a different way. Like there's the Meshuggah approach, where like, have you ever listened to Meshuggah? Like Thomas is super metal and like crazy.
I've heard the name of the band. Yeah, I don't think I've ever listened.
He's famous for like taking like a rhythm, like if you take like a 7-8 rhythm or a 7-8 drum groove. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Like stuff like that, but like. Just taking that another way, like for this thing, for example. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And just doing that and really hearing, like, is that that's not really a straight up partial or one of Benny Greb's letters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a combination, but it's even notes. Yeah. And I feel like that. Right there, that's the key to breaking the walls when you're learning to flow or just incorporate other feels or phrase concepts into your playing by feeling that constant pulse.
Yeah,
because then you're like, oh, I could go there if I want to, and then I can come back, or I can like kind of go there, you know, like where you superimpose modulations.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like again, taking this thing and playing it in 16th notes, but over 4-4. 1, 2, 3.
I love that one.
What, you know?
I love that one.
3. Or doing like, 1E and a 2E and a 3E and a 4E and a 1E and a 2E and a 3E and a 4E and a 1E and a 2E and a. I have to go over that again. Yeah.
But I know exactly what you're doing. You're starting on the downbeat and the E's and the ands. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fucking difficult because you're always entering in. Tell me yes or no. You're entering in a new. You have to reference a totally different part of your vocabulary.
Yeah.
Like it's like your brain. It's like flipping through pages
that
you wrote notes in, like very fast.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then like, you know, getting to the twos. 1E and a 2E and a 1E and a 2E and a 3E and a 4E and a 1E and a. You know,
can I ask you about your three in a row? Do you have a technique for it?
So I use heel down when I'm playing like jazz or I'm playing on the Camco kit I was telling you about, like the really high tuned kick drum, the way you play off. But I've always grown up burying the beater. I know there's mixed things about that, but I heel up. I guess I kind of do a little bit of a swivel.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's the same as this, really, right? It feels the same, kind
of,
right?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. Stuff like
that. Gotcha, okay. Hey, man, that's the other thing, too. It's like, dude, if you're making, if what you're playing sounds good, you can fucking play with your toes. I don't even care. If it sounds musical, I can't argue. What's the fucking point of
exactly.
arguing?
Exactly. Yeah,
you know?
Yep.
Because I could sound like shit and be playing with the quote correct technique.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That's
how many of those guys you've seen or people you've seen?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the other Nate Smith, you know, like he plays with Wolfpack sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, I've read, or maybe it was in an interview, he, buries his snare drum stick into the head and leaves it there.
Yeah. And he does some weird.
And you're like, I mean, I've heard you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
But he plays so fast and it sounds so good. Yeah. Like, who am I to tell? I am in no position to tell Nate Smith to do anything. But,
he does a thing, too, by the way. Have you noticed when you watch him, he does a thing, here's his rim shot, right? And his hand's like this. But then when he does all these group
He switches notes, to, French,
he'll
right?
just, he'll go, maybe the beat's like a...
Yeah, he's doing five.
I don't know what the fuck he's doing.
I never really do that sort of thing.
That's one of those things where you know, because the way he's doing it and the way the beat sounds, he just started doing it.
Yeah, yeah. He's just whatever felt nice to his body, he did it.
It's happened.
And he's awesome. He's have you seen the video where he's he's playing to this audience and having them clap on one.
I think I know what you're
talking
about.
And he's I bet you guys can't stay on one. And they're doing pretty good. The whole audience is musicians. But he's just totally just displacing everything. And I think he's yelling one when one is. And I'm it's unreal. That guy is so much sauce in his playing. Ugh. It's a smart, that's the type of complexity that I really like. He's just so tasty.
Tasteful. Everything's tasteful.
So
yes.
Tasteful. Yeah. But feels so good, and the average person will dance to Nate Smith when he plays.
So you know what? I'm gonna let's maybe I'll title this because I like the concept. Mm-hmm. We're talking about groove. We're talking about making people dance, right?
Yeah.
And then we're talking about switching time.
Yeah.
So we're gonna call you. We got
sorry. Okay, what were you saying?
No, I was gonna say the concept should be, mm-hmm. you should always strive to be a funky time traveler.
I'm down.
A funk time traveler.
Yes.
You traveling through time, making people dance.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's our jobs.
If you're not making people dance, stay sometime.
Yeah.
Just stay in one time.
Yeah.
Right? You have to make people dance. If you're going to do shit like that, it has to be now versus now.
Yes.
Do you know Future Favela or something?
It sounds... Yes.
That shit's in 15/16.
But if,
why am I dancing to it?
Exactly.
Right?
That's the gold. That's right there. That's where it is.
It seems so simple, right? When they start playing it, and then they start improvising over it, and you're like, there's nothing simple about this.
Not at all.
There's nothing simple. They just did a lot of work.
Yeah. And I think people are... when you, especially younger people nowadays, they see this grandiose thing on Instagram or whatever, this person just shredding.
Yep.
They're seeing the final product.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And is it really even a final product? Because you could always do more with it. But and I think that discourages people sometimes, seeing this just immaculate thing. You don't know the work that they had to do, the painstakingly slow work,
Well, you got to ask this first, though. The person who's like, oh my God, I love this and I want to do this, probably. Yeah. What do they want from it? They want the accomplishment or do they want that glory and the attention?
Yeah, you're right. They probably want the glory.
I have to ask myself that.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Why am I doing this video? Why am I so obsessed about putting this video up? Mm-hmm. And that's why, you can get caught up in the, oh my God, look how many likes or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple years ago, when I started posting Instagram videos, I got a little addicted to the hearts.
It's like dopamine.
It's dope, yeah.
Chris Coleman was going to write a book called The Like and write it about that.
Really?
Yeah. I forget. Did you ever listen to the Drumeo Gab podcast?
Yeah, yeah, that's a Canadian dude.
Seamus, yeah. Oh, he's so good. Yeah, so good. Dude. But I used to listen religiously, but he took a break because they're going to revamp the show and stuff. But yeah, I think Chris Coleman said it on his podcast. But yeah, he was going to call it The Like. Power of the Like.
Power of the Like.
Like how detrimental it could be to people.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, it's hard. You got to really just enjoy what you're doing, because the thing is, you're never going to be satisfied if that's the case.
People know when you're fishing, I guess, if that's what I would call it, fishing for attention.
Yeah.
Rather than, especially with something like music, you know when somebody's enjoying, you want to watch somebody who's like enjoying what they're doing.
Exactly.
And their attention is in getting, like, I care about doing this.
Right.
You can like it or not, you know, and that's what I like to see. Like Brody Simpson.
Oh, God. Yeah, he's great. You know? His recording, like, techniques too. Oh, my gosh.
Unreal, man. He's definitely changed my life a little bit and how I approach recording. I'm really into the recording stuff, like more than I am shedding stuff.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working on it, I guess. I guess it makes sense why I've acquired it, right?
Yeah.
Like this setup. But he kind of, he's doing the shit. He's carving the trenches and building the roads for what I wanted to do, which is to take those really fucking cool electronic and hip hop influenced beats and, like, not just the feel of it, but the actual sounds. Like, how am I going to get that effect
in, like, real life,
in real organic life?
I know. See, that's cool. That is really cool.
I love that stuff. Yeah. And he enjoys it. You could tell he's so clean.
Oh yeah. So clean.
Disgustingly clean.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yep.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's so funny how most drummers that I talk to, we can reference the same Instagram drummer, that, you know, people on Instagram, basically, that, you know, discover. I got to tell you, like, you could talk shit. I could talk shit about Instagram.
Uh-huh.
But the drum community, I can't talk any shit about.
Yeah, everyone's so cool.
It's so awesome.
Yeah, it really is.
Do you feel like you're a part of it?
I guess kind of. I mean, not like, I'm not like a Instagram elite guy, but you know.
What I mean is, I guess, do you feel like what you're contributing is like, you know, like, hey, this is part of it. Like,
yeah, I think so. I think some people, I think my stuff kind of inspires people too. And
yeah, it definitely does.
Oh, well, thank you.
I was going to say, I hope you know, like just, that's why you're here.
I appreciate it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know you that well, but I was like, I got to have a conversation with you guys. And if he's willing to come in person and do it and play in front of me, fantastic. This was awesome.
Yes, this was fantastic.
This was really good. Okay, other than your Instagram, it's all going to go down in the description of this episode and all that stuff, all the links for you.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any bands or artists that you're playing with that you want to maybe plug at all?
Well, I'm in this one group called The City Limit. It's like kind of a blues rock folk fusion type thing.
Cool.
And we did release a record, like, well, we finished it before quarantine, but we released it like online, because I remember you were saying like, oh, band should wait.
Yeah.
But we had a radio promoter like who's gonna blast it starting January for like eight
That's
weeks
cool.
And we have like a couple thousand plays on the new single. So it's good and people seem to be really receptive. It's so the band's called The City Limit.
The City Limit.
The name of the record is See Your Way Out.
See Your Way Out. Okay.
Yep, and there's six tracks on it.
Okay.
Track one's a banger. I mean, they're all cool.
You have a Bandcamp?
Bandcamp, we're on Spotify, all those.
Everybody go stream it at least. But go buy it if you like it. Like, go buy the thing.
We do have physical copies.
Have the files too, you know? I love having the files.
Yeah. Yeah. We recorded it at Backroom Studio in Rockaway with Kevin Intrisian.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So
very cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was a great experience. We had there's some strings on the last track, which is really cool. Some people, some of Kevin's friends in Brooklyn were on the record.
Nice.
But it's great. Scott, the main singer, songwriter, kind of mastermind, he writes just beautiful lyrics and just the stories. You could just like, you could feel it. And
that's cool. So even as like, as a drummer, you feel like emotionally inspired by the songs too, right? So
yeah
and that is like, that's the best.
Yeah, and that music's just like, you know, it's feel good music for the masses, but there's like little things in there that, you know, that I think drummers will appreciate and the musicians in general. But that's like kind of the main thing. I play in so many groups, but that's like the main thing right now that's going on.
Okay. And anything else that you want to plug while I'm pulling up the city limits?
Yeah.
Page here.
That's really. I mean, I play with Mike Soul, who is the keyboardist in the City Limits, but he has his own solo project that I play for, and he just did a music video for one of his songs that I like make an appearance in, or a couple appearances. I'm like in a picture frame, and the guy Nicholas Libero, who did the music video, excellent videographer. It's a really well shot music video. It's called Jalou, which I think is French for jealous. Mike's gonna hate
Mike's
me for not knowing it.
Soul, you said?
Mike Soul. It's MYKE and then Soul. And those are like the main two right now. That's more of an R&B jam fusion thing. Do you know Jerry Ulicki by any chance?
No, I don't. Actually.
Okay, I thought you did.
Jerry.
I think Jerry. Yeah.
How you spell that?
J E R R Y, and then I always pronounce his last name wrong. I'm sorry, Jerry. It's U L R. Something like that. It'll come up on Facebook. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't really have anything with that to shout out. But he just released a new music video for one of his songs.
Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, other than that, you know, that those are like the real active ones.
Cool. So even through this time.
Yeah, even through this time.
That's good. And by the way, I feel better that you guys waited till the new year.
Oh, you did? You do?
Yeah, because like that makes more sense to me. Because at least in the new year, you're thinking like, okay, something's going to fucking change.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But like people who it's like, it's August. Here's our album.
Yeah.
I'm always saying that. I was always saying that like.
No, I know what you mean.
Fucking save it, you know? And like when, because.
Well, yeah, we did sit on it for a long time. So.
Because like, dude, when they see you and then, oh yeah, did you like that? Here's the album.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. That's like. Yeah, I guess it doesn't matter though, because as long as it lives up there, I guess.
Yeah, and we have one music video out for one of the singles, and then we were planning to do two more, at least when we last spoke about it. And I know that they're like Anthony and Scott, the bassist and singer, guitarist. They've been doing like acoustic gigs to like, kind of help pay for they pay for the physical CDs,
yeah,
and stuff like that. So they're playing actually tonight at the Exchange in Rockaway.
Oh, nice, man.
Yeah. So they're like, that's really the only live music kind of going on right now. The little singer songwriters.
How cool would it be though if, because the whole process of recording, right? Like, you know, it takes so much goddamn work.
Yeah.
Right. And you as a drummer, you probably you go and do your tracks.
Yep.
And whether you're there for the rest of it, I mean, the rest of it is so much work, right?
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, it's like, it would be cool if these bands like did like shot footage to show that process. Mm-hmm. And then that was like content, like this is how we're breaking down this track. And then when it comes out and then you're like, hey, you know, it's already there. It's like, hey, if you like this song, like this is how we broke it down. Like that's how I think, that's how my mind's working these days, mm-hmm, about like, okay, how are people consuming what I'm going to do or what you're going to do. And I think they're going to log on to your Instagram and they are going to hit what's there. And if there's nothing there, you can't ask them for much.
Right. Yeah. That's why I've been getting, I mean, just posting every week, just one video of just like me practicing, or it's just a good habit to build. You know, it doesn't even have to be, I've tried to get rid of that perfectionist type of attitude, which is very hindering.
Yes.
You know, so and just kind of just let it be as it is, because you know there you can get close to perfect, but there's no absolute perfection. You know what I mean?
So true.
There's
man.
Perfect moments. Yeah. You know? But Matt Garska said it the best.
Matt Garska.
Yeah. He's just like
killer.
Yeah. There's perfect moments. I'm trying to get more of those.
Well, you know? Dude, you're like one of the only reasons why I want to log on to Facebook.
Oh well.
Like
then I did
like,
my job, I guess. Yeah.
Seriously,
yeah.
Fuck that app.
Yeah.
Okay. It's so much negativity.
Yeah.
Shout out to Lawrence Haber, bass player. He's another one. Just, mm-hmm, just always just doing content at least twice a week. It's so awesome. I hope you also realize too, man, like you doing those videos, you know, we have a network of people that we know and as musicians, and I bet you a lot of those people haven't gigged and were planning on gigging or touring or something like that, mm-hmm, and they've been sitting, waiting maybe, or not knowing what to do with their time, and you're putting out these videos. Believe it or not, that's like inspiring to those people.
Yeah.
That really like gives them like, holy shit, look look what Sean is doing. What the fuck? All right, I'm going to go practice, put on the, you know, put the phone up, maybe take a video.
Yeah, it's a good habit to get into, you know?
Yeah,
just,
man.
Just do it. Like, who? In actuality, it's just music. You're not doing, like, you know, brain surgery.
That's right.
So, like, if, you know, it, just let it be out there. Because it's only going to open more doors for you. Like, I would not have been invited here if I didn't do that sort of thing.
It's so, not like it's a resume. Like, hey, look at this video posted February, whatever.
Yeah.
That kind of sucked or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
nobody's
yeah.
going to do that.
Yeah.
You know
yeah,
what I mean?
It's like, yeah, it's all about just constant growth and inspiring other people, I
Absolutely,
think.
Man.
It's good to get used to having a camera being put in your face, too. Because
that's, right.
that's like a thing. You know, that's that adds another level of stress.
The observer.
Yeah, and just getting used to that is just good for recording, live, whatever, you know. I mean, experience helps. I mean, I've been doing it for a little while, so it doesn't
sound
as bad. But it's still like, oh, there's a camera here. I better, you know, play all right.
I better be at my best.
Exactly, you know. But I think it's important to not get too wrapped up in the perfection.
I think you're totally right,
like
man.
That.
But for somebody, out of all people to say that, like your videos and your performances, nearly perfect.
Oh, well, thank
and
you.
That's what's so cool about it. So everybody listening, go check out Sean Farrelly on Instagram, on Facebook. Do you have a YouTube?
I do. Yeah, it's you just search Sean Farrelly drums. I have a couple videos. I have like a they're old. I have the Super Mario video challenge.
Gotta, everybody's got to see that.
Yeah,
I have to see that.
Yeah, it's 3 minutes of just the Mario theme song with a stupid
it's
five awesome
crazy.
Wonder. But yeah, Jonathan Collin Green, check him out. He's
okay.
Unreal.
Okay.
So that I did a cover of a Tigran song like years ago. Entertain Me. I don't know if you're. Do you know Tigran Hamasyan? The jazz.
Yeah.
So I did a cover of that.
They would play with him, right?
Yeah.
And what's that other guy? German guy.
Arthur Nate.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like an electronic drummer. Like
he's
he loves.
Good.
Yeah, you would definitely love him. I think he came out. He has his solo project is called Swims. I think.
Okay.
I think you would like a lot of the stuff. It's all like electronic synth triggered.
I guess I don't follow him on. All right, I'm going to check that out because that sounds fucking cool.
Yeah. I saw him at Subculture with Tigran.
Did you?
That's where I first saw the drummer. I was like, this guy is unreal. Like, people are headbanging to some of these songs.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, this is a jazz club. This is my favorite place ever because it's like, I love metal and I love like the new modern jazz stuff. I mean, I love the old jazz stuff too.
Dude,
like,
but it has that metal energy to it,
just,
right?
Oh, it's just so in your face. But, yeah, I did a cover of that, and then I don't know if you're a big fan of video games.
Yeah.
But do you remember the game Chrono Trigger from, like, 1995? It's like a...
I know the name of it.
It's like
I know the reference of it. I never played
it's
it.
It's sort of like Final Fantasy, but
okay.
a little bit different. It's my favorite video game ever, but I put drums on one of the, like, one of the pieces in one, parts of the game. It's called Memories
wow.
of Green, and I just wrote drums under it for fun. This was, like, 5 years ago, and I was like, I'm going to do the YouTube thing, and I, again, was too wrapped up with perfection, and I was just like, oh, nothing.
Yeah.
And then I did an Animals as Leaders cover. I did KFO.
I don't know the song by name right now, but all I know is that probably took a lot of work.
That was really hard. I transcribed it, you know, rewinding and stuff. But, yeah, I haven't done too much stuff. I did, like, a lot of the 80-20 stuff on YouTube, but it's all private. I guess I could release it eventually. You could just see me through the stage.
Well, if listener will message, maybe message you or something.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll give him access. Guys, you got to go follow him. Got to go give him some support. Dude, thanks again, man, for doing this.
Dude, thank
man.
You.
This
Andy.
Was fantastic. Do you
want
to play us out?
All right.
All right, everybody. Take care.